News Talks Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to Air, with UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues action. Brought to you by Air Sport.
You're welcome back. Kenny Cunningham here in studio, Kevin Kilbane here in studio, and Emmett Malone of the Irish Times. You're on the line there, Emmett.
Yeah, hi, Joe.
We just wanted to reflect on the Premier League season as it was for Irish players. So you wrote about this today. I think Nathan was tweeting about the number of goals scored by Irish players in the last few days. It hasn't been a vintage season, and obviously these things can be cyclical and you can overreact. The bare numbers are 20 players, 20 Republic of Ireland players, either past or present or not available to us, but 20 Republic of Ireland players in the Premier League since last summer. No player in the top six, and Irish players contributed a total of 19 goals across the Premier League season. You made the point in your piece today that numerically it's not a dramatic decline on, say, a decade ago, but you pointed out that the likes of Steve Finn and John O'Shea, Robbie Keane were at bigger clubs. Kevin Doyle was nominated for Young Player of the Year and kind of finished behind the likes of Fabregas and Ronaldo, but he had an excellent season. So the numerical difference is not huge, but maybe the quality difference is certainly something to remark upon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can hark back further to that, to the kind of glory days of Liverpool and United when they had a lot of Irish players there or whatever. But yeah, absolutely. So you look back a decade and it was, I think it was 22, 23 Irish players at that stage in the Premier Division and a kind of fair spread of clubs. I mean, Kevin there would have been playing at that stage. But we did have still have a few players at the very biggest clubs. One at Liverpool, one at United, one with Robbie at Tottenham. So what we've seen is, you know, a gradual slide in terms of the kind of highest league position finish that any club with Irish players who are playing regularly has achieved over the last few years. A slight decline in numbers and also worryingly an underlying trend of the players getting older and older. You know, we have of the kind of 19-20 that are there today, excluding Declan Rice, who was given his first team debut at the weekend at 18 by West Ham. You have, you know, Glenn Whelan, 33 years old, John Walters, 33 years old, well, Shea Given, I take it, is retiring at 41, John O'Shea, 36 years old. Even guys like Darren Gibson, who, you know, are not really, you know, at the very end of their careers, whatever, 29, Mark Wilson, 29, James McLean, 28. These are guys who were big prospects for us. And, you know, you could argue about the extent to which they've delivered, but they're kind of, you know, at the wrong end of their careers now. There are very, very few young Irish players coming up. You have Robbie Brady at 25, Jeff Hendrick at 25, but you know, a lot more the right side of 27, which is not terribly encouraging.
Mm. Kenny, you've of late seen the talent at Irish underage level. Are there prospects coming through? Can we expect for maybe another, there's a bit of a gap in the generation maybe when you listen to Emmett outline the age profile of the current players. Have we reasons to be optimistic? Are there lads just around the corner, or will it be a struggle for them?
Yeah, I think we have reasons to be optimistic. I always get a little bit angry. I hear people talking about the dearth of talent coming through. We've nobody coming through. And I always think, well, what are you basing that on? Have you been out to watch a lot of our underage groups, are, you know, 15, 16, 17s and 19s and 21s in particular? Because unless you've been out there and assessed these players, you can't really have a strong opinion. I've been fortunate enough, I've worked with the 19s over the last year, and I can tell you now there's some real talent. If anybody gets the opportunity to go out and watch a couple of these players play, it'll give them real heart and real optimism for the future. I'm not saying these lads are ready to step in the next year or two, but potentially over the next 3 or 4 years, a number of those players, the nucleus of that team, could potentially step up. I don't generally like naming players, particularly of a too young an age. It puts too much pressure on them. But sure, you mentioned one already, Emma did, Declan Rice. It really impressed me at centre-half. Cueven Kelleher as well, in goal for Liverpool. Conor Masterson, Tariq Wilson at Manchester City. Kev will be aware of him. Outstanding young left-back. Jake Dalhays, Conor Ronan, players who've actually got first-team experience this year at Wolves, Cardi O'Keefe at Birmingham. So there's a number of players there with real talent. And I must admit, it was a real joy to work with these players. And I think back to the level I was playing at that level, and I was fortunate to go on and represent my country at a certain level. But I couldn't lace the boots of a number of these players in terms of raw ability. So that gives me real heart.
I was going to say, it must be more difficult now than ever, Kev, because you've been out, you've seen, for instance, Lee Carsley was working with the Man City underage players, yeah, and you've kind of come back and even just chatting in the office just made the point the standard now in comparison with when you and Kenny were coming through is off the charts, unrecognisable.
Yes. I think we all understand the problem that we are going to find now with the net that's been thrown much wider, hasn't it? So you need to look at Man City, Lee's team in particular, who's under 18 side. The nationalities that's playing in that side now, from Spain, from Switzerland, from there's even African boys. So, as you said, it's gone much wider now, but the talent is incredible. It is. Man City's under 18s. You look at them and you're thinking, how on earth could I have progressed and got anywhere near that sort of level when I was 17, 18, when I was at the age that these lads are. Tariq Wilson's a lad that I would know. I've seen quite a lot of him just playing for City's under 18s. Really impressive when I've seen him. But it's difficult, as Kenny's saying, when you start to name the names, because we've all seen these sort of players. But maybe the one thing that I wanted to put to Emma, and I saw the St Pat's under 17 side this afternoon. I met the manager and had just a brief chat with him there, and or the coach, should I say. And it's how are we going to see the under 17 and the 19 league? How are we going to, or the 17, the 15? I think it's coming in now. I think now, Emma, isn't it? So how beneficial is this going to be the long term? Is this realistically our best chance of helping our lads progress?
Well, I think that remains to be seen. I think there's some optimism about how that's going to work. I think that what we're seeing is perhaps a slightly belated reaction to the trend in England. I mean, Kenny makes the point that there is talent coming through, and I completely accept that. I mean, the piece today, the context is absolutely where we are in the Premier League at this moment, yeah, and an ongoing trend that's been developing over a number of years. It's a snapshot, but it's a slightly alarming snapshot that there's so few players under 27. Playing at that level. I think that you've mentioned one of the key factors there, which is sort of globalisation of the recruitment process 10, 20, 30 years ago, certainly going beyond that. Dublin, Belfast, and to a lesser extent, the rest of Ireland was a kind of, the back door for the back garden, for these English clubs, and they came here and they recruited regularly. Now there's no real barrier geographically to doing that, and they bring in players from all over. And so, you go to an academy in England, and where there was once a whole kind of cluster of Irish players, there might be one, there might be two. We're talking about the Manchester City Academy, and absolutely, there's some terrifically talented players there, a few Irish lads. And I have seen some of the Irish underage squads and some of the Irish underage teams and been impressed by some of the talent. But, we have faced this problem then, as the English players face and players from other countries face at academies like Man City, where they reach a certain level and then can't break through to the top, to the first team. And we were certainly, a lot of us were very excited, and there was a lot of talk about the likes of Jack Byrne and Ian Lawler a couple of years back, and both of those have had to move on from City. So what we're seeing is, I'm not saying that that's necessarily the end of the story for them by a long shot, but what we're seeing is a kind of new pathway developing, and that takes, on the one hand, players going to the biggest clubs and working in their academies because they will always have an allure to them. But where the first team opportunities, the chances of actually making the breakthrough at that club are incredibly limited. So what you have is kids going, it seems, for a really, really good footballing education, working with the best facilities, with the best coaches, but then having in the vast majority of cases to drop down the leagues in order to get their first team career started.
But Emma,
what we have here is a system developing of youth team leagues associated with the League of Ireland clubs, a change in system, a shift away from the DDSL, the Dublin District Schoolboy League, which was the traditional pathway to England at 16. And if you didn't make it at 16, then really your chances were extremely limited getting away. Mm. We've seen that change over years again as part of this gradual evolution, so that you've had more players making a breakthrough here, playing first team football with the league, and then going. And we're seeing that system now developed in the national leagues at under 19, under 17, and soon under 15 level. So we're seeing a kind of transformational shift in the way that we're going to develop players here. And perhaps we're caught in a gap, where we're paying the price for not having moved earlier, where the English clubs are no longer developing our players the way they used to, and where the new system hasn't really kicked in. But right now, you'd have to be concerned, I think, at the number of players playing at the very top level.
But Emmett, I think we're doing the right thing from our point of view. Once they get into the system in the UK, there's very little we can do. The players are outside our control. And like you said, it's a similar problem for the English national team over there, let alone players from an Irish background. So I think the question is, how can we affect things better when we have the hands on our talent, our players, when they're in Ireland, when they're 10, 12, 14, 16 years of age?
Can I come to that point and I'll give you the official situation, because I spent some time looking at FAI strategic documents today, and Kev did as well, and that was a lot of fun. I think it's fair to say a lot of corporate speak, a lot of words like player centred and all this kind of stuff. So there are certain targets they want to hit by 2020. They want to increase the number of UEFA qualified coaches by 30%, pro license, 10% for A license, 10% for B license. There's two areas, age groups. There's the emerging talent program, which has been running for some time now, and that's running at regional level for players aged 11 to 16. And the amount of work there varies. You know, for lads who are hitting 15, 16, there can be 27 training nights and 7 matches. That's what's organised at these 11 centres around the country. So that's for players 11 to 16. And now what it seems they want to do, Emmett, is to start impacting on kids with proper coaching at a younger age. So the plan to have this in place by 2020 is the plan. So if you're between 6 years old and 12 years old, they want an FAI-approved development academy. So this is essentially just a club which would meet criteria along the lines of contact hours with the kids, syllabus, coaching qualifications, child welfare policy, all this kind of stuff. And so they want to have 80 of these clubs as FAI development academies by 2020. And then that ties in with the under-19 National League, the under-17 National League and the under-15 National League when they get to a certain level. So you tie all that together, it looks on paper like a fairly coherent strategy, but I dare say the reality on the ground is that there are lots of holes and quirks and areas where it doesn't quite work.
Yeah, I think the feedback is kind of mixed on it. I think that there's definitely a sense that the FAI are trying very hard here. It's they're coming from probably a place where they were a good way behind some of our rivals, in this. But they are definitely making an effort. I think what you see is where there was a pre-existing kind of infrastructure in Dublin, say, where the DSL was very well developed in the way that it developed clubs, and some of the clubs are astonishing in the operations they have. I mean, the likes of St. Kevin's are far ahead what any of the League of Ireland clubs have in terms of their facilities and their youth development strategies and success over there. They have very proven records. But outside of Dublin, it's far patchier for historical reasons. Over the course of the boom in particular, and in the years since to a lesser extent, the facilities in these places have improved dramatically. Clubs around the country, invested heavily in their facilities because of the capital grant scheme. With the FAI's backing, there have been an increasing number of coaches going out there, so the coaching levels have been improving. But we are definitely playing catch up here. And what you have there, we're following on the models developed, say, famously in Germany in the 1990s, in the Netherlands before that. The Germans, went to the Netherlands and looked at what they were doing, and everybody around Belgium we've read about a lot, and the incredible progress that they've made. We are essentially going down that path now, but we're really only setting out on it in a serious way. So we're catching up. And we have some problems. We have some problems in that we don't have the kind of concentrations of high quality players in some areas of the country. The mantra in this area is always the best against the best. You want high quality players to be playing against high quality players. And that's difficult if you're, in the west of Ireland, say, or the south of Ireland, where there isn't a particular area where geographically there isn't a whole load of, high quality prospects play against each other. So there are some challenges to be overcome there. I think the FAI is doing its best in this situation, but it is hampered by a great many kind of drawbacks, not least its lack of financial resources, and also a kind of cultural thing. There are a lot of people here with vested interests. There are a lot of leagues with they've been attempting to break down the league structures so that you can have players going to clubs in their local area and then playing against good players from another area. But people don't want to break down the old league structures. They don't want for clubs to lose their best players. This is something that they've been through in a lot of other geographical areas and a lot of the other associations. But it's proving very difficult here, partly because we don't have that culture outside of Dublin of producing these players.
But I think, Emmett, ultimately it's about what's the right environment for the for the players themselves.
Sure.
And I think you've mentioned a couple of the clubs there, St. Kevin's Boys, probably maybe St. Joseph's of the South Side, probably a similar example to that. And for some players, I think that may be the best environment for them in terms of the quality coaching facilities that you've spoken about. Even the fact that maybe it's 5 minutes down the road from the house. You know what I mean? Maybe they've got one or two friends there. That might be the right environment for a particular type of player. Mm. For another player, maybe not. Maybe getting himself down to Rovers, Cork, Sligo, in their under 15, under 17 team. Again, good environment, quality of coaching as well. That could be the right environment for them. So for me, we're in a better position now than we were 10 years ago. I like the template that's put in place. I understand, you know, culturally there's going to be certain problems there and a bit of internal politics and the whole shebang. But at the centre of it must be the player. You know, not about what's best for the club. We want to keep our best players. We want to get the best players. It's all about player development. What's the best environment for a particular type of player? And that can be different. Every player's needs are different. But this feels better for me. This template has been put in place by the FAI. For me, it makes sense. I don't get too caught up, Joe, saying a lot of reading, a lot of sound bites and stuff like that. For me, it's about what's happening on the ground with the players, hours with the coaches, you know, emerging talent programme, many hours that they got, are you up against the very best? And quality of coaching, Emma, for me, is absolutely huge. You can have the best facilities in the world in terms of, you know, the best pitches, artificial surfaces, strength and conditioning, the gym area, it's fantastic, all the weights in here, we're doing everything, the medical assistance, the whole sports science thing, it's wonderful. Mm. You haven't got good coaches within that system, the whole thing breaks down. So that's absolutely key for me. And one thing rolling out the coaching course, let's get 20, 30, 40, you know, A-licensed, pro-licensed coaches. But for me, that has to be real, that talent pool of coaches there as well to complement the wealth of talent. I've always believed we have, Emma, the length and breadth of this country. It's always been there. We've just got to tap into it more. We've got to locate it earlier. And we've just got to develop it, you know what I mean? We've got to, you know, treat these, you know, cocoon these players, spend time with them, encourage them and develop them over a period of time and hopefully manage them through the system, whether that's through the schoolboy system or the schoolboy clubs or the League of Ireland through the academy system and get them coming through 17, 19, 21 and into the League of Ireland environment. It'd be great to have a system in place 5-10 years, Emma. We have our very best young players. You know, the core group of the players who traditionally would have gone away 15, 16, 17, having them, at least having them a little bit longer, 18, 19, 20, into their early 20s, them feeling as if, you know what, there's an actual pathway. Forget about jumping at 16. There's an actual pathway for me here. I'm happy with the environment I'm in, the football that I'm playing, the quality of kids that I'm playing with, the coaches I'm playing under. I'm really enjoying this. I'm progressing. I'm getting better. I don't want to jump ship here at 18 years of age. I want to stay in this environment. Maybe in 2 or 3 years' time, I'll think about it again. And for me, that's, you know, we're never being in a situation where we're going to keep these players till 35 at best. They're always going to go. But can we keep them? Can we put the structures in place that we can keep these players a little bit longer to their early 20s? Can you imagine the quality of football League of Ireland supporters could be seen on a weekly basis? We could keep this talent pool of players for a little bit longer and develop them ourselves before we actually say, well, off you go. There you go, over to England. And getting compensated as well. And when these players do jump on that money coming back into the game, coming back into the system and into the clubs as well.
Well, I think the key thing is we're going to have to start planning that way because fewer are going to go over, I presume, Emmett, if we're talking about the globalised academies and players from all around the world being picked up by Premier League clubs for their academies.
Yeah,
fewer Irish kids are going to go over.
I think what you'll always get is the very best, you know, kids each year going at 16. I mean, I think lads there would know far more of these stories than me, but I remember hearing the story about a kid. I think he was in Ballyfermot a few years back and he was 12 years old or something like that. And there was a knock on the door on the Sunday morning and the parents went down, opened it up and Alex Ferguson was standing there, you know, and he comes in and tells the parents how much they want that kid to go. And, you know, I think there's always, you know, a kid or two in Dublin every year that everyone's talking about and they will go. And there will always be other kids who will then, because they're not picked up by the top clubs, but they'll see or their parents will see England as the way to go. And what we have here is, I think, you know, somebody suggested to me recently that there's still kind of 30 kids going a year at 16.
Right.
But in many of those cases, they're going now to lower league clubs where a higher percentage of them were going to the Evertons and the Chelseas and United. Some of them are going to, you know, the kind of wherever, but whether it's the Bristol
Cities or the Nottingham Forest or lower again. Like, I mean, there was a rather famous case a couple of seasons back where a group of kids went over to Stevenage and the money they were on was terrible, really. But they saw that as their best way to a career in football. And you can't, it's very difficult to criticise them because the infrastructure wasn't here. I absolutely agree with what Kenny's saying there. I think that this is the way to go. We have to provide alternatives. We have to do a number of things. We have to provide a safety net for those kids, a more effective safety net for those kids who go away and don't make it and come back, and to bring them back into the fold and into the League of Ireland, because we have lost way, way too many of them down the years. We also have to develop more effectively the kids here and give them a pathway to senior, high standard, competitive football that continues their development as players into their late teens and early 20s. And so far, we have really struggled to do that as a league here over a prolonged period of time. This structure appears to start addressing that. But again, if you go back to the philosophy in the other countries, in Belgium, in Germany, and in the Netherlands, what they were talking about there always was the best against the best. Well, what we have here is we have a lot of these players spread out now across kind of almost the number of clubs there are in the League of Ireland. And we probably don't have the kind of depth of quality there at the moment to have a really elite league at that stage. And that, I think, is becoming, you know, it has shown itself to be a problem in certain instances. We've had big wins for certain teams over other teams because there isn't the kind of equality or spread of talent across the league. But certainly we appear to be moving in the right direction. It's very early days and it's going to take a while to see just how successfully we're doing this.
Okay, Emmett, people can read your piece in the Irish Times. Thanks a million.
Thank you, Joe. Take care.
Here's Emmett.
We'll take a short break. Some texts coming in. We'll put them to the lads in a minute.
News Talks Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to Air, with UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues action. Brought to you by Air Sports.
I'll get to some of the texts in a minute. We are, I should remind you, all off to the Helix Theatre this Thursday. It's the Off the Ball FA Cup 2017 roadshow, thanks to Budweiser, official beer of the Emirates FA Cup. On the night, we'll be joined by Michael Ballack.
Yeah. I thought you were saying Michael Bublé there. No. Definitely Ballack, is it?
Definitely Ballack, yeah. David O'Leary, Mark Lawrenson, Ronnie Whelan, John Giles, Keith Andrews. Oh, that's not
a strong
bad.
Panel.
That's not bad. That's a good five-a-side.
Kev? No? Oh, no. That's harsh.
Busy.
That's harsh, Kev.
No, he's busy.
Is he on standby in case one of them drops out? Is that how it works around here? It's a disgrace, Kev. Wouldn't have that.
If you wear your team colours on the night, preferably red and blue, given the teams in the FA Cup final, you'll be in with a chance of winning a trip to the Emirates FA Cup final between Arsenal and Chelsea, along with accommodation and €1,000 spending money with thanks to Budweiser. Tickets for the night are free. To get your hands on them, go to newstalk.com/OTB Helix and register. And if you want to get your hands on exclusive VIP tickets, which will get you front row seats, a chance to meet and greet some of the stars, and some great Budweiser hospitality, simply text Bud to 53106.
Gold dust.
He'll draw the winner later in the show.
Willy Wonka in it. Willy Wonka tickets.
Gents, if we're being honest, our most exciting players in the last 20 years have come through the likes of Wolves and Blackburn, not United and Arsenal. Lesser teams have served us well. Hi, lads. You forgot to mention, or don't forget to mention, Anthony Breslin, under 23, captain at Wolves, smashing left fullback, one for the future, says Gary in Dublin.
Matt Doherty as well, the things I mentioned, just made into the squad as well.
Yeah.
He's been a regular.
Are you as optimistic as Kenny, or a bit more worried?
I think the worry is, it's the certainly development over in England, certainly with how the game's gone. I do feel as though the way things are going here, and you look what Shamrock Rovers are trying to implement now over a long term, I think it's good. I think it'd be good for our players' development. And I'm a big advocate of what Kenny's saying. I've been saying it for a long time now about keeping our lads back at home, keeping the lads here, try to help them develop so they're a lot stronger physically when they go over, mentally prepared, because lads that's been going over at 50, the fallout rate anyway, we know the stats. We can throw any stat at you about the fallout rate in general across the board, but it is extremely difficult for a young lad leaving at 15, 16, going over the water, no matter what level of ability you have, to go on and develop and become a first team player at whatever level. Yeah. So I think that it's certainly a much better option for our players to develop here.
We've
got to
convince those young players now, and their families, their mothers, and their dads, it's in their best interest to stay here, hang around here.
Tough when Alex Ferguson comes to your door.
No, totally. And Emmett's touched on it, the best. Yeah. Of the best will still go, definitely. Yeah,
but you're both in agreement. It's just so much harder to make it now than in your day. Yeah, and like do we get to a point where we just have 10 Irish players in the Premier League? Five.
I think we should get away from this kind of. I've heard it before. We haven't any players playing in the. I don't buy into that one. And we've qualified back to back for the last two. European Championships. You know what I mean? It's not as if we've fallen off the radar in terms of international football. We're not competitive anymore. We suddenly drop. We're still competitive. We're still a force to a certain degree. So for me, it's all, I always look at the players. Forget about what clubs they're at. What's the quality of footballer that we have? When I look at that Irish team now at the moment, I look at Robbie Brady, Jeff Hendrick in particular, I think, real outstanding talent. That's the heartbeat of this team going forward over the next kind of four to five years. I take Emmett's point about the older players, of course.
I don't want to jump across your head, but there's one lad that's come into the squad this week, Alan Brown at Preston, and it gives me particular enjoyment when I see him. And it's not, I've certainly have had no say in his development, but he came to me when I was coaching at Hull at 15. So he came to me and he was playing with Ringmahon Rangers at the time down in Cork, and they were actually brilliant. They would have bent over backwards for me to sign him at Hull. He was out of my age bracket because he would have been going into the youth team, of course. And Ringmahon wanted about €5,000, I think it was, for him. And Hull were reluctant to pay, and you could see immediately, trained with the first team squad with me, and you could see his first challenge, he's going to be Robbie Brady, and he jumped into Robbie Brady, and this is a kid at 15. Robbie Brady's a superstar coming on, he's on loan from Man United at the time. He smashed Robbie Brady, and you immediately just looked at him straight away and you thought, this lad's got something. And there was a reluctancy from the club because they didn't want to step on the other lad's toes that they had in their academy to pay €5,000. I think I'm sure that was the fee, €5,000, that they wanted. And I said to Nicky Barnett at the time, I think we have to take this kid. We've got to take a chance on him. But it was out of our hands because the budget wasn't a first team budget. It was a lot more complicated, a lot of politics. Anyway, he goes back, he signs for Cork. Now he goes back to Preston, and now he's got development of playing at Preston, lower league football. Got promoted with Preston, a lot of experience. I think he's played about 150 games now. So this lad now has gone on, and he's one I've watched a lot, and I've been waiting for him to step up. And hopefully now, he's not necessarily ready to go on and play it within the squad. He's come in as a 38th man or whatever he's going to be. But it's great for him that he has actually gone, played lower league football, he's worked in his development, and now, at 22, I think Alan is now, he's going to be a player, I believe. And I've seen it a lot in him as he's developed at Preston. I'm looking for him to maybe go on and kick on now, and hopefully he'll do that.
Off the ball. On News Talk 106 to 108.
And we shall wonder if one day our game is played on the other planets. We will have interplanetary competitions.
Your job now is to stand by our new manager.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
If my granny had bought, you'd be the granddad.
Big Sam Aladicio, that's right.
This is going to be awful. So what's happened here is live on air, Kenny's gone out, he's bought the fish and chips for everyone. Didn't get any for me, that's fair enough, Ken. That's fine.
That's a collective thing.
That's fine.
SM2 this place, is it? I've got my glasses on.
I don't know how we're going to get through
Scampi's
the show.
Scampi's a winner. Scampi is an absolute winner.
And eat. But we'll try not to muffle down the mic and chew, Kenny. So you just need to wave at me when you can talk, which is not right now, because you've got a chip hanging out your mouth.
Go ahead.
Your diet's good. You look trim. You're not having fish and chips very often, I wouldn't think.
Oh, no, this is an exception to the rule for me, Joe. Absolutely.
A rare treat.
A rare treat, like four times a week.
Carbs are a no-no for you?
Ah, Joe, you've got to have your carbs.
No, spuds.
It's all about protein now, no?
It's all about when you eat, Joe.
You've got time
of the day.
Dave McIntyre eating his protein muffins every 2 minutes. No, you've got to have your carbs.
You can only have your carbs.
Balanced diet, Joe.
Only have your carbs if you're expending the energy. Like, if you go for a big run, have your carbs. Yeah. But I didn't do much today. I shouldn't have a big feed of carbs today. I didn't do much.
Because you're preparing yourself for tomorrow, though, Joe. That's it. You go out and have a great session tomorrow.
You've only done a 6 mile run. That constitutes you didn't do too much.
I didn't do any exercise today.
I've done nothing basically.
No.
Oh, right.
So I can't be having a big thing of carbs today, you know.
That's why I didn't offer you a tube.
So, hi Lance. I was on a flight to London 2 weeks ago. Kenny was on the same flight.
Do you know what? I've met some great people on that route.
He was a gent, as I expected, but I noticed he stood up pretty much the whole time. I wasn't sure if he really needed the loo or his back was at him. Mystery solved. Ronan from Dublin. It's his sciatica, as revealed earlier.
Ronan should just ask the question. Yeah, just go up and ask the question. Very approachable, Kenny.
Yeah. Kenny.
Yeah, I'm getting a few suspicious looks off here. As soon as the bell sign goes off, whoosh.
Stand
I'm up.
I'm up
back to the, back to the bottom of the back of the plane.
Yeah, the toilet's there, Kenny. Just go.
Yeah. People are coming to the back. Are you using the toilet? No, go ahead.
Stick on your headphones for a moment. So we're going to talk about a few things. John Terry has been kind of dealt with at this stage, although we will be talking about the best defenders you've seen in the Premier League era on the back of Terry's exit.
Apart from Kenny Cunningham.
Apart from Kenny. That's already, you know, come on.
Goes without saying, the best defenders. I'm not going to come up for discussion.
We'll have Chris Hughton on the show as well, named LMA Championship Manager of the Year last night. And obviously, as I mentioned earlier, was... coach with the Republic of Ireland for you guys.
I've pestered, good spot, I think.
Yeah.
I've pestered Chris for a long time now. He's probably so fed up. He just thinks, sod it, I'll come on tonight.
Yeah. I'll do 5 minutes. Yeah. To be fair, he did hear that you and Kenny were on.
Oh, as soon as I said Kenny, I've been asking for a while. Chris, you get on. Busy. This Kenny's on tonight. Yeah, no problem. Bang, straight in. As soon as I mentioned your name to him, that was it.
Moved heaven and earth.
Yeah, whatever.
Meanwhile, 15 years ago today, and I would think, we're at 9:15 now. I would think in about 17 or 18 minutes time.
No, we were beyond it. No. It was a night for us. It was afternoon here, wasn't it?
I'm just saying the start of the 9 o'clock news.
Yeah, okay.
On RTE1, this report would have went out.
Ireland skipper Roy Keane has been sent home from the World Cup. This has been confirmed by manager Mick McCarthy at a news conference in Saipan within the past hour.
Roy Keane and controversy have been fellow travellers for most of his professional career, but his expulsion from the Republic of Ireland squad a week before the World Cup finals is nothing short of astonishing. Having threatened to leave the squad a couple of days ago, he was persuaded to change his mind by, among others, his Manchester United manager Alex Ferguson. This morning, as he declared his intention to retire from international football at the end of the World Cup, he lashed out at the Republic of Ireland's pre-tournament preparation, describing their training pitch in Saipan as shocking.
It's not a lot of people say, well, it's typical of Roy, and Roy should really shut up, but I can't, especially if I'm captain of the team. We come over here, we travel halfway across the world, and the training pitch is a disgrace. And somebody's got to hold a hand up and say, it's like training on a car park. Bloody rock hard. We've had one or two injuries already and I expect a few more.
He wanted to do his country proud, he said, but it was hard to work with people who don't have the same motivation as him. This evening in Saipan, Ireland manager Mick McCarthy called a players' meeting which he claims degenerated into a slanging match between himself and Keane. McCarthy said he would not tolerate the level of abuse he received and so the Republic of Ireland captain was sent packing.
I can't, will not tolerate not being spoken to like that, but the level of abuse that was thrown at me. So I have sent him home.
Steve Staunton, who will now take over the captain's role, said the players fully endorsed the manager's decision, claiming that Keane's behaviour was unacceptable. And another senior member of the squad, Niall Quinn, said their allegiance was to Mick McCarthy and the rest of the now 22-man squad.
I'll say goodbye to Roy and wish him well for the rest of his career. But my priority now is to show complete allegiance to Michael, to Mick, to the squad, and to get everybody who's in a little state of bewilderment to get them thinking the same way.
Yeah, well, Roy's a good captain. He's a Manchester United captain. He's a Republic of Ireland captain. Very experienced, so he's a very, very important member of the squad, but so is everyone else. 23 lads. It's not just all about one player. It's a team game here and a squad game, definitely in the World Cup. So, as I say, we need 11, or we could need 16, we might need 18. You don't know. You might need the whole squad. But it's just important that everyone is on the same wavelength and enjoy it as well.
This is a squalid and rather tragic end to the international career of Ireland's most inspiring player, and his exit from the 2002 World Cup has sent shockwaves round the footballing world. Tony O'Donoghue, RTE News, with the Republic of Ireland squad, Saipan.
Probably the first time you've ever heard that, is it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
You know, when we saw it was the anniversary this morning and we were all kind of laughing about it and saying, oh, we'll ask, you know, geez, we must ask the lads about this, and oh, Kenny and Kev, they'll roll their eyes and say no. And funny watching that report, it suddenly became very serious again watching it and you realise the strain on the faces. Gary Kelly, you would have heard there, Mick McCarthy, you see shots of Roy, Shay Given, there's a few shots of him at certain points, and it's only like, God, it's really not a joke. It's a terrible thing that it happened. And I know you hate talking about it and we wouldn't ask you about it usually, but it is the 15-year anniversary. Can you remember feeling desperately strained and under pressure and just stressed out massively by the whole thing?
Now, probably the time that news report went out, we were probably back in our rooms, Kev, weren't we? And just you know, looking at each other thinking, what's just happened there?
It's actually unbelievable it happened.
Yeah, it was unbelievable, but I can't help but look back with a bit of sadness even now today. I don't talk about it too much. I don't talk too much about my international career, to be honest with you, but that episode in particular, because I just thought everybody lost. I think Roy lost. He missed out on a World Cup and he should have been there because he was a big reason why we were there. He was our captain, probably our most influential player. I think we lost by not having Roy there, and that's not being disrespectful to the players who stepped in. Mark Kinsella and Matt Holland came in, were exceptional. during the course of the tournament, but we would have been a better player with Roy in the team. And we came, right, how close did we come to a quarter final against the host nation? Went out against penalties. Could Roy have been the difference? He could well have done. He was that good. And I think ultimately Mick paid a price as well. I think it cost him his job because that cloud hung over the squad and hung over Mick for the months after that, Kev.
We're still hanging over. It's still hanging over everyone, a sense, isn't it? You bring it up now and it'll probably drive so many texts, so many tweets that will be coming in tonight about it, because it still does. And the amount of times you're out on the road and it's the first thing that people want to talk to you about because of how big and how influential that story was over so many people's lives.
I think everyone just regrets so much that it happened, as you said, Kenny.
Well, we had Jason on, didn't we? And I spoke about it last week. It certainly was. You look back and it is. It's sad. It is sad how it all transpired. And
People try and laugh. You know, people bring it up and they laugh it off. They're looking for a little bit of a soundbite, a bit of a throwaway comment from me. But I find it difficult, to be honest, for the reasons that I've said.
Yeah.
Because it was too important. It mattered too much to everybody. We expended so much energy, Kev, trying to get there to that particular point to the... at a World Cup. So it was devastating in a lot of respects for everybody concerned. As I said, everybody lost.
Yeah, it's not something to joke about, because even the last time you were in here, you guys were, you know, faces lit up talking about the flight out of Iran and the champagne corks going the second you have liftoff and you're out of Iranian territory.
I was on the Perrier water.
I know, there's footage of you singing a song on the way home for the whole plane.
No, I'm not having that. No chance.
It wasn't The Crack Was 90.
Maybe I did have a bit of champagne.
It wasn't The Crack Was 90. Kenny was singing. Big Strong Man. Big Strong Man, that's what he was singing.
Could be right.
He was singing Big Strong Man. Yeah, he was.
So you go from that point, unbelievable joy, everyone pulling together, like Portugal and Holland in that group. If someone had sat down to you and said to you privately, by the way, this is all going to go belly up and Roy's not going to even be involved in the World Cup and the country will be divided. Like, you're a bunch of young guys in your 20s, want to do your best for the country.
Yeah.
You just wouldn't have believed it in a million years. How is that going to happen?
I'd say even that. It's the pinnacle of my career.
Yeah.
I grew up watching Mexico 86, watching the lads in 90. And 94, I was desperate. Honestly, if you'd have said to me when I was 10, 11 years old, what would you rather do? Would you rather win a Champions League or would you want to go and play in a World Cup with Ireland? And I know which I'd have picked. Straight away, I'd have snapped your hand off playing a World Cup with Ireland. That's all I wanted to do as a kid. It's all I ever wanted to.
And we come so close, Kevin, we had a couple of tournaments before. We come comparatively close to qualification and missed out that kind of group of players that were together for about half a dozen years. So this was it. This was it for us, you know, and we eventually made it. And it was massive. I remember one of the lads saying actually upstairs in the room, look, just kept saying this is surreal almost. It's one of those just huge World Cup stories which we've kind of read about over the years, but it's actually happening now to us and we're kind of a part of it. And it was difficult to get your head around it at the time.
Did you blame Roy? Did you think, Roy, what the hell are you doing here? Why not? Like, if you want to air these grievances, fine, wait until after we're done. Retire after the World Cup, go. Why do this now?
Yeah, I suppose that's an easy thing, but we're all different. We're all different characters. Roy's mentioned that the situation, the quality of the training pitch. I think Mick would have been as disappointed as anybody when he arrived there. Yeah, clearly he was given it. I wouldn't worry about the bib so much, more trivial, but the quality of the training pitch certainly is a factor.
Yeah.
So I think Mick would have been as disappointed with anybody when he got there. And so I think he went public and said that. So yeah. And Roy mentions a few lads picking up injuries. I tweaked me hamstring, I think it was the second day of training, whether the surface was a factor or may not.
Steve Finnan rolled his ankle, certainly.
Exactly. So in those situations, I suppose it's some people, and Roy being the captain, I understand where he's coming from. He's captain. He feels as if he has to make his, give his opinion. Certainly he would have given it to the manager behind closed doors, to go public and air your opinions as well. Again, that's coming at it from a different angle, I suppose. But we're all different beasts, Roy felt as if he needed to get it out. He needed to put it out there. Was it in the best interest of the squad? Well, ultimately, maybe not, because it ended up with him leaving the squad, and that's not what we wanted. We desperately wanted to have Roy there for the reasons that I've said. So I think people, looked at the training pitch and thought, oh, it's not, you know, when you go out and you train, you spend so much time at the hotel, Kev, don't you? You really look forward to those training sessions, a couple of hours in the morning, an hour in the afternoon. You can't wait to get out on the training pitch. You want to see a good surface, get the balls out, little five aside, absolutely lap it up. That's what makes the day go quicker. So the quality of the surface wasn't good. So it's one of those things, what do you do? You know, it's taken us so long to get there. We've given so much. You suck it up. You know, you make the best of it. You make a joke of it. You know, you get on with it. You know what I mean? that's the type of attitude you generally would take. And Roy, to be fair, has that sense of humour. He has that quick wit, generally speaking, Kev, doesn't he?
Yeah,
you
know, yeah.
He can see the funny side of his situation as well, generally speaking. You know, he's as sharp as anybody. He's great company when he wants to be. But that particular time, it obviously... he wasn't happy. It stuck in his gut and he felt as if verbally, vocally, he had to put it out there, and that's where the problems came.
That's the frustration, because, I mean, he would have dealt with FAI mess-ups for a long time at that point, and you're so close to July. Just make it July. You've put up with the FAI since 91, I think, when he makes his debut against Chile. And that's where, you know, us looking in the outside, it just seems inexplicable, and it seems terrible that that meeting that Mick mentions where, you know, he pulls out the Irish Times and said, you said this, and Roy is a go back, and it gets incredibly heated, that even then it can't be pulled back. You know, even then senior players can't get involved and say, okay, everyone back into this room. Let's not let this get out of hand to the point where you're gone. Come on. But it seemed like once he was out of that meeting, it was done.
I think it was. Once the meeting was over, I think that was it. There was no come on back.
Yeah. And you didn't feel, do you know what, let's go back after him, get him back down here. Let's sort this out. Did that cross your mind?
Just because of the content of the conversation between Mick and Roy and how it progressed during the course of the meeting. For me, it was obvious to everybody when Roy walked out of the door, that was it. He wasn't coming back. It was a very difficult position for Mick to be in then, because of the way the conversation had gone and Roy had spoken to Mick in front of the players. Now, you could argue, should Mick have had that conversation with Roy in front of the players?
Yeah.
I'm sure he had conversations with him privately. Some managers like to address the group as a whole, don't like to treat individual players differently. I don't think there's any kind of right or wrong, but certainly it was the wrong outcome in terms of Roy leaving the squad. It's not what anybody wanted.
I'm not going to ask you what was said, because I don't think that's fair neither of you, but you would have seen some unbelievable rows as a professional footballer's things said to players, managers, all sorts down the years. That's almost the other curious aspect of this, that this was so bad that you, hardened professionals, thought, that's actually crossed the line now, we're not going back.
No, that's it. That was it. And it wasn't like stupid stuff like swearing and, yeah, you're a this, that and the other stupid stuff like gutter stuff. It wasn't like that. It was just, you know, people giving very forceful opinions of what they thought of each other. I sat next to Roy, actually, to be honest with you, and Mick called to me. I thought we were having a table. I thought it was a table quiz. We were getting set up for a table quiz or something like that. And obviously, you know, Mick instigated a conversation. It went in the direction that it did, but there was no, you know, once the conversation was out and it was out there, that was it. You know, there was no point in anybody stepping in.
No.
And you, what a surreal thing to be sitting beside him. I didn't know you were. So you sort of glancing at him at the side of your eye.
I was actually on the table. I think that's the story. We were in two big round tables we were at. So Kenny probably would have been sat behind me, because I was actually on the same round table as Roy. I was actually sat immediately to him. So when we turned to Mick to our right, Roy was over my left shoulder. So Kenny was probably over my right shoulder here beside me as we turned to him. And that's how it was. And it was just, I think we all look back and, of course, in hindsight, we all would have probably nipped in the bud early. We wouldn't have allowed it probably to get to that stage. I think I'm sure that someone would have stepped in and stopped it. But we weren't to know how it went, how it was going to go.
You didn't feel it was bubbling, it was coming in the few days before? There was an initial issue, and then it was sorted out.
And I think because we were so far away, I think even the article itself, the article that had been written, we didn't get it, did we? We were getting a transcript that was getting faxed through. We certainly didn't have any...
You're a bit detached there, Kev, weren't you? Not nowadays,
we were totally
social
detached,
media.
Totally detached from it all. So we were totally unaware of what was actually being said back here. Nothing had really been relayed back to us. I mean, the full extent of what had been said. So we were unaware of it all, and that was probably the problem. I certainly think now it would never have got to that stage, because the issues would have been addressed and we'd have all been able to read exactly what had been said and all these sort of things. So that was certainly the big issue then around that time, yeah.
Were you able to park it and enjoy the rest of the tournament, or was it always there for you, Kenny?
No, we tried to move on as best we could, and that's no disrespect to Roy, as if good luck to Roy, he's forgotten about, because he wasn't, and deep down I think everybody was thinking the same. I wish Roy was here, you know, going into battle. He's the one you wanted by your side for a load of different reasons that we all know about. But what do you do in that situation? You let your head go down, your chin hit the floor, you know, the spirit of the squad to be effective. That was never going to happen, so we kind of pulled together as best we could and didn't forget about Roy, but we just had to make the best of things and get on with things. you know, and it was too much responsibility on their shoulders, not just to each other, the coaching staff, but their supporters at home and everywhere yeah. around the world. There was a huge amount of responsibility. The supporters who'd come out, it was,
I think we
spent a huge amount of money to come.
I think we actually did feel it even more so then after it had happened because we knew how we'd all of a sudden become the big story. We certainly had gone under the radar a little bit.
Yeah.
Whereas we had every country's media all wanting to come and talk to us about that one incident. So we'd suddenly become certainly international news rather than just being national news over here. We were this little country going over there, not expecting realistic to make a big splash. Mm. But if we had him in our side, Roy was in the side, we would have certainly been making a bigger splash. And that was the thing. Our main player, captain of Manchester United, is gone. Yeah. So that was then, I think, in all our minds, I think we it's not so much we had to pull together, it was none of that, but it was more the fact was that we had an added responsibility then to the supporters that were going out there, that we probably had to pull together even more so than we usually did, if that was at all possible.
Were you talking to family or friends back here in Dublin and getting a sense of the extent of the fallout, Kenny, or did you not bother with that?
Did we have mobile? I can't even remember we had a mobile phone.
We did have mobiles, but we were... I don't think it comes into my head. It was the first time we'd ever seen camera phones when we got to Japan. First time we'd ever seen them because it was just the standard mobile phones. And we were pulling in for our very first day training in Japan when we'd arrived back from Saipan. And everyone was holding the phones up. We didn't know what they were doing. We were going, what the... And then we realised then, camera phones. That's when camera phones, we were first aware of, it, of course, 2002. And then, you know, everything's changed.
I vaguely remember you. Do you have a little selfie stick then, Kev? I vaguely remember you producing one of them.
That was the first camera phone. And now 15 years later, Kenny's just got his camera phone for the first time a month ago.
Well, even that, in Saipan, there was no camera phones. So none of the players had a camera phone. We just had our standard mobiles, yeah. which would have been the old style Nokias, the Ericssons, whatever yeah. it would have been. That's what we all would have had. And I don't even know if they actually would have been working out there because charges were so high.
Right.
We wouldn't have even used them. We would kind of...
Cost. All comes back to cost with Kevin. Anything more than 20p a minute, forget it.
So can you...
Put on the FAI bill.
Can you remember talking to family then? Not really. You don't have very strong memories of hearing about the reaction or the scale of the reaction back home then. Bertie Ahern talking about, you know, getting a private jet and being willing to intervene, and like it was just wall to wall coverage. You no sense of that, did you, Kenny?
No, we didn't actually. I remember there was a hotel, there was a computer in the lobby of the hotel. I remember nudging a couple of the lads going down onto that computer thing and try and get a bit of, you know, see what's happening back home. Or, but it wasn't a huge amount there because we were in it. We were kind of didn't need to know a huge amount more.
Lads trying to, Kenny, go on Google that. What? what are you on about?
Google. Lads, says Liam in Limerick, the morning I heard it was official that Roy was going home, I sat outside work and I cried in my car. I was devastated. I hated Mick so much. I despised him and I blamed him. I fell out with a work colleague. It was tragic.
Yeah, I think that is the tragedy because it kind of pit people against each other back home.
Yeah.
And that's probably the saddest thing of all.
I was 17-year-old Manchester United supporter. And it was very obvious to me, and I was in no doubt, that Roy was at a different level to all of you lads, had ambition that none of you lads had, that the pitch was a disgrace, that this was typical Ireland stuff, and Roy, quite rightly, had enough. Now, 15 years later, Roy should have toughed it out. You were going to a training pitch in, was it Nagasaki?
No, we were in Chiba. We actually went back to Chiba from Saipan, right.
You were going to a brilliant... going to a brilliant facility.
Yeah,
was it Chiba? No. No, you might be right there, actually.
I think our training base
was Chiba, I think, just outside Tokyo, wasn't it? I think, yeah.
But either way...
You think you're right there, actually, Joe, yeah.
Tough it out for a few days. Be reasonable. Get on with it. Say sorry to each other. Tough it out. Retire in July if you want to. But at the time, people were either, I'm with Mick 100% and Roy is so out of order here, or... Roy is the only one who's shown, you know, some Celtic Tiger ambition. Ireland should be first. And they were the two sides going against each other. That was the debate. It wasn't anywhere in between.
Yeah. And of course, that's never the case, is it? It's never as clear. It's never as simple as that.
Sure.
Yeah, and that is sad. It is very tragic because we were aware of that and obviously more aware when we came home because it lingered on for weeks, months, spoke about Mick's resignation, probably years.
Maybe even now
people have those conversations. Still a bit of ill feeling around and that shouldn't have been the case.
Yeah. I think when we played Russia, it was the first qualifier we had after the World Cup. We lost badly out there in Russia and then we came back to Dublin for Switzerland
game.
And it was the first time certainly my young international career, probably been around 6-7 years at that time, but it was the first time I experienced real negativity from the crowd, and it just, it was a horrible atmosphere from the minute we went out to warm up to, you know, the first whistle starting the match, and then as the game progressed, obviously playing poorly as we did, and we, I think we were drawn at one stage, and we've gone then to try and win the game, and we end up getting beat on the night, and that real negativity set in throughout that game, and it was a horrible atmosphere to play in. Everyone was playing within themselves because we really felt, we felt for Mick, I think, as well, and I think we certainly felt for ourselves, but it was...
That you could sense the press room as well. I remember going into the press room a couple of times and you could sense a heavy, heavy atmosphere inside the press room as well. It was building. You could sense that pressure was building.
I think during the World Cup, everyone pulls together. It's a big event. You cope with the fallout. But then I think around that time, it became apparent to people, if we want Roy back, Mick's going to have to go. That's what people...
Do you know what, George? Well, you spot me that. We were at the World Cup, yet as soon as the World Cup finishes, it's all over. We're back in our clubs. It's the first time that we get together for the doubleheader after that. I think we actually played Finland. I think we had a friendly against Finland.
August, yeah.
Yeah, but the first time we were back in Dublin properly for the big qualifiers, and that's when we felt it. That's when every time the lads were facing the press... The first question that was being put to every player facing the press, and that's where everything changed from then on. Everything did change from then on, I felt,
We'll go to ads and we'll park this and we'll drag it out till 10 o'clock. I know you don't want to do that. You've always been very wary of talking about it, Kenny, and it's obviously, it had a big impact on you. It mattered to you a lot. And because I've noticed that every time you've come in, you really don't want to get into it. Do you, like, is it something you think about very often?
No. I generally don't look back in terms of my footballing career. I've probably said it before. It's one of the proudest times of my footballing career, the time I spent within the international group. But I had some of the biggest disappointments, gut-wrenching experiences in that Irish jersey as well, and still carry the scars from those. So I generally don't get back. And in particular, the situation in Saipan for the reasons that I've said, because I just felt... It's just sad. I still think it's sad. I don't like to linger on it because, as I said, everybody lost.
Okay, we'll take a break. Thanks a million to the two lads. And Chris Hughton's going to join us in the next hour as well. We're back in a few minutes.
Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter.
Your life story is yours. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Kiltearn & Semberley Park is a breathtaking resting place where absolute peace and nature could be part of that epilogue. Visit kiltearnandcemetery.ie. That's kiltearnandcemetery.ie for details on our traditional burial gardens and cremation interment gardens, each set against a stunningly beautiful backdrop. All options are available to pre-purchase. Kiltearn & Semberley Park. It's about peace and peace of mind.
It's almost 9 o'clock. Sleep easy tonight on our new king-size comfy beds at Travelodge.ie. The favourite hotel for value.
Good evening, I'm Tom Swift. The people of Manchester have come together for a vigil to remember the 22 people killed in last night's terrorist bombing in the city. An 8-year-old is among those who were killed at the Manchester Arena, while 59 others are being treated in hospitals across the city. The thousands who gathered in Albert Square in the city centre observed a minute's silence in honour of the victims, and community and church leaders insisted love is stronger than hate. Mancunian poet Tony Walsh summed up the defiant mood with his poem, This Is the Place.
There's hard times again in these streets of our city. But we won't take defeat, and we don't want your pity, because this is the place where we stand strong together with a smile on our face, Mancunians forever.
It's understood the man behind last night's attack was from Manchester. Police have confirmed the bomber who blew himself up as fans left an Ariana Grande gig was British national Salman Abedi. Chief Constable Ian Hopkins says the police investigation is ongoing.
Our priority, along with the police counter-terrorist network and our security partners, is to continue to establish whether he was acting alone or working as part of a wider network.
The Office of the Director of Corporate Enforcement says it fully accepts the criticism of its investigation into Sean Fitzpatrick. The former CEO of Anglo-Irish Bank will be formally acquitted tomorrow by judge's direction for offences under the Companies Act. Judge John Aylmer said the ODCE made many fundamental errors, including the coaching of key witnesses. In response, the ODCE says it wasn't equipped to undertake such an investigation at the time, and is a very different organisation now. Tom Lyons, deputy editor of the Sunday Business Post, says the case was badly mishandled.
And unfortunately, because of the way that the state took the case, this led to inordinate delays, and we saw the longest criminal trial in the history of the state wind up as a bit of a debacle and with an acquittal.
News Talk Weather, thanks to kayak.ie. Where can you fly to on your budget? With Kayak's Explore tool, you choose how much you want to spend and when you want to travel, and we'll show you the destinations that match on kayak.ie.
Mostly mild and dry tonight, with just some drizzle in northern areas, and lowest temperatures between 10 and 14 degrees. Tomorrow will be warm and mostly dry with some hazy sunshine. And now you're up to date on News Talk.
News Talk's Off the Ball.
7 days a week.
Thanks to AIR, official sponsor of the GAA Football All-Ireland Senior Championship.
Welcome back. We're continuing with the football show. Chris Hughton's going to join us very shortly. Richie is here and has been hit by a wall of fish and chips
Good
and vinegar.
Lord. Do you know when you like encounter like really strong vinegar and it just feels like all of the air in your lungs just is sucked out through a vacuum? That's what it felt like walking into the studio.
I can't even smell it anymore.
Thank God Tom Dunn is in the studio next door for 10 o'clock, because otherwise I think he'd asphyxiate on that sink.
Can I just say though, it's been incredibly enjoyable to do the show. Kevin Kenny here. Some fish and chips, men breaking bread with each other, talking about Saipan.
That's grand.
It's been a good time.
But the noise of him putting scampi in his mouth and breaking away batter on air into a microphone.
This is 9 out of 10.
Right, we're not doubting that at all. It's just the noise of it into a microphone, Kenny. It's just very unprofessional. I'm putting that out there. You know, thanks for coming in and all that.
Hands up, yeah.
But keep your grease away from our microphones.
There was a great text in actually about your fish and chip choice, which I've completely lost, but it's absolutely spot on. JP, if you can dig it out again. Just about, yeah, you know.
You should have gone for the... Did you get the garlic mayo with that, by the way?
Oh, no, that's...
Heresy.
Oh,
yeah. What's mean heresy?
No. Sometimes I like a bit of tartar sauce, but not mayo.
Garlic mayo?
No.
Tartar sauce? No. I'm sure about that either.
Tartar sauce is okay, but I wouldn't go...
Tommy K.
Kenny Cunningham.
Okay.
Kenny Cunningham, the hipster eating his super Miss Sue fish and chips. Leo Burdock spinning in his grave, says Dave in Bayside.
I know. It did feel terrible. Well, Kev, wasn't it? You get the pick up, didn't you?
Yeah.
If in doubt, blame Caban.
So we're going to crack on. Where are you starting with?
The only goals to speak of in the three games in the SSE Tristy Premier Division tonight remain at Dalyman Park, where it's Bohemians 1, Limerick 1. Rodrigo Tosi opened the scoring for Limerick tonight with his 7th goal of the season. But Georgie Poynton has equalised the on-loan Dundalk midfielder for Bowes tonight. So it's Bowes 1, Limerick 1. Still scoreless at United Park with Drogheda up against third place Bray, while Dundalk remains scoreless with Derry City. Dundalk looking to close the gap on Cork to just the solitary 13 points. Confirmation tonight that Sam Allardyce has left his position as Crystal Palace manager. He's released a statement that suggests he's not on the lookout for another managerial job. He says it's hard walking away now. I think the club are heading in the right direction with a hugely supportive board of directors, a great squad of players and some of the most passionate fans I've ever met. It's been a privilege working here for the past 5 months, but there comes a time when you have to take stock of what direction your life is going to take, and that's been a simple part for me. I want to be able to savour life while I'm still relatively young, 62 is Sam, and when I'm relatively healthy enough to do all the things I want to do, like travel, spend more time with my family and my grandchildren without the huge pressure that comes with being a football manager. It's the right time. I have no ambitions to take another job. I simply want to take time to enjoy life.
What age did you say it was?
62. It'll be 63 later on this year. So fair play to Sam. Great statement for him. And he's quit as manager of Crystal Palace. So another job open to him. Kenny shaking his head. Why are you shaking your head at that?
Well, not sure I'm buying that. Careful. Not sure I'm buying it.
Right. Yes, but either way, he is gone. Meanwhile, Ernesto Valverde has moved a step closer to being confirmed as the new Barcelona head coach. Athletic Bilbao tonight confirming his departure from the Basque club after nearly 4 years in charge there. Valverde, the frontrunner to replace Luis Enrique at the Camp Nou, with Barca having confirmed that they'll name their new head coach next week. Well, Lauren Koscielny will definitely miss this weekend's FA Cup final with Chelsea. The Football Association today rejected an appeal against the French defender sending off in their final Premier League game of the season against Everton on Sunday. His Bamians, he lost.
This is when you need the camera.
You're shaking your head again.
I can't believe they appealed.
I know, unbelievable.
Oh my God. It's worth an appeal.
What?
His feet never left the ground.
All right. I won't bite at that, Joe.
Do you remember the film Silver Streak? Anybody, Out of Control Train? Do you remember 140 mile an hour? That's what it looked like to me coming across the pitch when he launched himself.
You could have gone with Speed, Kenny, but no, you chose Silver Streak.
what was that one on the subways? The one they remade a couple of years ago with Denzel Washington.
Oh,
that was a crap. I liked the original one.
No, the best train, Phil, John Voight. Remember, he was an escape con and he hijacks a train.
He's 12. He has no idea what you're talking about in terms of films.
In terms of good train suspense movies, Silver Streak was more of a comedy. It was Gene Wilder, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But John Voight, somebody will know the name of that film. Okay. Runaway Train. Runaway Train. Anybody? No?
Nah, don't remember that one.
Classic. Classic.
Alrighty, we're going to press on unless there's something massively
important.
Okay. Okay, some of the texts coming in then. Boom, 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 boom. Okay. Roy had a valid point, but the team did the Irish so proud days in Ballybrack. Fully convinced, says Jack in Dublin, Ireland would have won the group and taken the same route to the final as Germany if Roy hadn't been sent home. As gallant as the rest of the team were, and they did brilliantly, my heart is still broken. It was our best chance ever lost, says Jack in Dublin.
Oh, I agree with that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Lads, open Google Maps and look at where Saipan is. It's half the way to Hawaii. What the shag were we doing there? Muppetry, says Fitz in the Geary.
Do you remember we walked up to the top of that Suicide Cliff.
Oh, yeah. There was a news report about you doing that, yeah.
Yeah, interesting, really interesting. But what the only thing I would say about it is that every Irish fan that we spoke to when we did get back into Japan kept on saying, oh, geez, it's stifling here, it's so hot. But it was that hot in Saipan. When we got back to Japan, it didn't actually feel as though... It didn't feel hot. Honestly,
we were
God,
cooking for about a week.
Because that was the hottest place on earth. Honestly, you would literally had a sweat within 10 seconds of leaving the hotel. Right. It was just ridiculously hot.
My dad got into a blazing row that almost got physical with my mate's dad in front of a load of parents and friends. A very embarrassing moment in my life.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. Even though what happened with Roy was unfortunate, it subsequently benefited future Irish teams. Conditions improved, better travel conditions for the team. Don't think Roy did it for himself, did it for the benefit of the team, had the guts to stand up and be counted, Brian and Tralee. Whatever about his motivations, did things improve from a logistical point of view after 0-2?
I think, do you know what, probably after, when I first got in maybe 97, 98, I think things were steadily improving across that 5 years that I was in prior to going to the World Cup anyway. I think travel around that time was always good because everyone makes out that the travel changed then. Roy had said something prior to that.
That's right, yeah.
Right. So the travel arrangements had changed prior to the World Cup, prior to going out. So we flew out business class to Japan and, you know, we had everything that we would want. So we didn't have any problems from that sort of side of it. It was a beautiful hotel we stayed in Saipan. It was just that pitch, and because the kit hadn't arrived, however that went, you know, logistics around that, getting that sorted out, that was a big issue as well.
Myself and my mates have a Saipan rule. It dominated so many of our conversations over the years that we're banned from mentioning it until 10 p.m. or after 6 pints, whichever comes first, says Maximus. P.S. Mick was dead right.
Yeah, amazing, yeah. Opinion still so kind of entrenched.
Presume when you both went back to your clubs, everybody in the dressing room was saying, what the happened? Tell us everything.
Yeah, it was a bit like that, yeah.
I can imagine.
Kenny won't let you in on any inside secrets of the dressing room. But that was the first question, I think.
I'd say so.
And the lads that you would be speaking to, you know, at the clubs on the phone, you know, I did have mine switched on, Kenny obviously didn't. Text coming through. Definitely was. What's happened, lads? And this was even from pals, from mates, from family. This is what you were getting all the time, constantly. But yeah, that was, as soon as you went back in, the lads you hadn't seen across the summer, first question in the door yet.
Mm. I'm not sure why I watched it. It just came up recently. The Mendy had a penalty on Given, the one that he rolls down the middle in the shootout, and it hits a bobble and goes over Shea's leg.
I thought I heard him claim that since then that he played for the little dink.
Oh, no chance. He mishit it. He bobbled. Mm.
It was a scuff of a shove down the middle of the goal, and it just took
that. Yeah.
Well, you couldn't predict where it was going to bobble. It bobbled at just the right point to get over Shea's leg.
What score was it? Can you remember the score on the penalties? Did it go to sudden death? Did it go to... Because I remember being stood in the centre there because I hadn't taken one.
3-2.
I'll double check.
I think it was 3-2.
3-2, was it? I do remember being stood there with Duffers, I think it was, me and him looking at each other thinking, oof. Could get to the stage. One of us may have to step up here.
Did Duffer not take a penalty?
No,
I don't think.
No, I don't think
he did he? Because
I do
remember looking at him, and we both just kind of looked in, didn't say anything to say, oh, could be one of us soon.
And how
that wouldn't have been pretty.
How yeah, Spain won 3-2 on penalties. How horrified would you have been having to take a penalty, Kenny?
Oh, I would have struggled. I really would have. I do remember feeling it, the pressure building a little bit as it progressed. I might actually be needed here.
I've just opened a Guardian play-by-play. Here we go. First penalty.
Kenny.
Robbie Keane steps up, knocks it high into the net. Ireland 1-0. Do you remember
right.
that?
No.
Okay.
I do, yeah.
Hierro steps up then, puts it away in the corner. 1-1. Matt Holland steps up, hits the bar.
Oh.
Second penalty.
Bar and over. Matt
was a really good strike of the ball as well. And I said it to you there. I think I've said it to you before as well. Currently not. Go on. Carry on. I'll come back to it. Go on. Carry on.
Okay. 1-0. Baraja steps up. I don't remember him.
Baraja.
He steps up and he scores after Holland misses. So it's Ireland 1, Spain 2. Next up, Connolly steps up, and I'm quoting The Guardian here, hits the lamest penalty you'll ever see straight at Casillas, saved. Then
Juan, not sure about the lamest comment.
Yeah. Juan Fran steps up, nearly does as bad as Connolly. He takes an extravagant run up but screws it wide.
That would have been me if I had got around to say, come on.
Oh, I'd forgotten this. Sorry. I'm sorry, this is terrible. Do you know what? We'll leave it.
No, go on. Go on.
Caban steps up, goes for the left corner, not quite hard enough. Casillas saves again.
I couldn't even remember if you'd taken one, Kev.
Bad pen.
That's actually surprised me.
Was it a bad pen?
Bad pen, yeah. I think it's before. We practice them every day. We did practice them every day, and I was a decent penalty taker, but. Just the one thing I was going to say with Matt, when Matt missed his, Matt was a really good striker of the ball, but the balls were very light, so we'd obviously got used to them by this stage. But Matt, generally when you hit that ball, those balls, that World Cup ball, it always was on the rise when you right. struck it, and Matt, he's just hit his ball and it just rolls. And I was maybe mindful taking up, because you didn't have to strike them with any sort of power. You didn't have to put anything through it. It just kind of moved and went through the air.
Yeah. So you didn't put enough on it.
Didn't strike. Whichever way you look, it was a crap pen, John. It was a crap pen.
Everybody respects how
it was
unbelievably difficult it is to get up and take a penalty in that environment.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. I'm going to press pause on this for a moment. Chris Hewton, you're live on the line. Good evening.
Good. How are you?
Good. You may have heard there what we're literally doing with Kev Kilbane and Kenny Cunningham is going through penalty by penalty against Spain at the 2002 World Cup.
We're being tortured here, Chris. Save us.
lads laughing at me.
Don't ask us how we got here.
Penalties is certainly not my speciality.
It's no defender's speciality. Ray Stewart, I think, was probably the exception. Chris would probably remember him.
Yeah, I remember him very, very well, and a very rarely missed one.
Yeah.
And there wasn't great finesse in the way he went about it. It was all about power. And,
yeah, absolutely.
Would you have stepped up, Chris, if you were there in 02?
I would have done, but I was also very conscious that there would have been, you know, better penalty takers on the football pitch than what I was. So, but certainly as regards, you know, having, you know, if you know, bottles the word, I would have taken one, but yeah, there would have been better penalty taken.
I think you've got to, like Chris says, you've got to be honest with yourself as well. People say you haven't got any bottle if you don't take them, but if you're genuinely not confident in your ability to go and execute the penalty, the big thing to do is to step away, I think, and say, look, no, I'm not ready.
Yeah,
let somebody else
step up. Chris, we've been talking about it. It's 15 years today since Saipan. You came in only a couple of months after that incident, when you came in as Brian's assistant. How did you and Brian have the conversation about how you were actually going to maybe pick the squad up after what had happened out there in Saipan, and when we come back in the aftermath of Japan?
I don't think it's a question of picking up. I think it's installing your principles upon the team. You know, and what, you know, I think there's a difference. I think there's a big difference between, you know, the same manager, you know, having to pick the players up, you know, after, you know, a difficult time or anything that's gone on, then a new and fresh face coming in. Because I think a new fresh face coming in, you know, automatically wants to do things his way, and probably is not really thinking about, you know, what has gone on in the last campaign. And, you know, if I can relate that to, you know, a little bit of what we had at Brighton, you know, last season, we had the disappointment at the end of last season, but with the same manager that went in, of course, myself, that went into the season this season. I think when there's a change in manager, I think automatically there's a change, a little bit in the mentality, because players want to know what this manager's about, how he's going to go about playing, the system he wants to play. And I think generally that tends to take care of itself. And the biggest priority for that manager is very much to get the players on side.
I presume Kenny Cunningham was difficult on the training ground.
Always difficult.
Come on. Don't shove me under a bus here. Come on.
I think I've reacted to the question. No, Kenny was always, and probably there isn't too much that I could tell you about Kenny that most haven't already told you.
Enough said, Chris. Thank you. Let's move it on. Back to Brian.
Incredible professional and the type of individual that every manager and coach wants to have around.
Congratulations on promotion. What an amazing thing for you and for the club. Was this on your radar at the start of the season? Did you feel you had a very realistic chance of attaining promotion, Chris? Or have you been pleasantly surprised by the season that you've had?
No, I've been pleasantly surprised. Our thinking at the start of the season was that we'd had a tough end of last season. Our thinking was that we again wanted to challenge and make sure that we were up there at least challenging for an opportunity of promotion. And you know what some have forgotten. You know, if we look at the wonderful seasons, of course the ones that have gone up, and of course your Reddings, your Sheffield Wednesdays, your Huddersfields, you know, Reading and Huddersfield in this playoff final. You know, what people forget is that, you know, Derby weren't in the top six, Norwich weren't in the top six, and Villa weren't in the top six. Three teams that at the start of the season, you would have had it down in the top six. So for us, it was very much about challenging.
Right.
And as long as I knew that we could be in there pushing for that top six, then we'd have a chance. Really pleasantly surprised the fact that we ended up being in that sort of top tier for probably most of the season.
I think, Chris, that's probably the most impressive part of the season, the level of consistency. We've all experienced the championship throughout our careers, and to maintain that level of consistency for a lot of different reasons, just mentally, psychologically, the players' concentration levels, the focus being right week in, week out, particularly being in that position, as you suggested, in the top two for all of the season. Not as if you were under the radar, maybe you came late with a run. Mm-hmm. You were there to be shot at throughout the course of the season. So I suppose that must give you the most satisfaction in terms of the mentality of the players, that kind of mental resolve they showed throughout the course of the season. That's a huge attribute to have, a collective attribute to have within the group.
Well, it is the thing that gave me most satisfaction. I think what we did do very well, and we've done it well, I think, in each window that I've been there, is that we've recruited well, and of course we brought in big Shane Duffy in the summer, who has really added to what we've got. Glenn Murray, of course, who got the goals, and probably Sidwell, who played more games this season than he did in the period he came, which was in the January came. So I think they were big factors as well. But the biggest factor was the motivation, that I had a group of players that were really motivated and really enjoyed being at the top of the table. And we always felt that the team that was going to be the closest to Newcastle was going to be the team that would go up with Newcastle. And that's and we had good periods where it looked like, you know, we might actually win it. Mm. But of course, that's how it ended up. And
Did the team run out of steam, Chris? Or do you have a sense of what the last three games really was what caught you?
Yeah, and probably that's, you know, the season has been an exceptional season, but it did finish on a little bit of a low, because we had three games to clinch the title and we wasn't able to do it. And you know, they're the difficult things to put your finger on. We understandably, in the first game, you know, after we'd seized promotion, was away to Norwich, which was a tough game. There's 4 days preparation, so you know, you can understand a little bit of that. Our supporters were there in very much a party atmosphere. But the two games after that, probably the Bristol City game was the most disappointing, because it was at home. Our preparation going into it was very good, as it was in the Villa game. And they're the moments that it really hits home to you, the psychological factors of the game, and that real, you know, percentages of motivation. And you know, there's no doubt, if we look back, even though it's difficult to see because the preparation is still the same, you know, we didn't perform at the levels in them three games that we had done for a big chunk of the season.
Chris, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned the disappointment of last season, but I sat there watching that playoff game against Sheffield Wednesday last season, and the way that you, you know, the dejection and the injuries that you had throughout that game, it couldn't have gone any worse, that play over the course of that two legs. But was there anything specifically that you said to the players in the aftermath of that game when you first come back for pre-season, or at the start of last season? Was there anything specifically that you had to say to the players to try to get them motivated again, or try to get into the mindset and how they were going to maybe overcome that disappointment, I suppose?
No, they have a good summer break. I mean, we played the second leg against Sheffield Wednesday, and they were in the next day, and then, of course, we didn't see them until the first day of pre-season. And, you know, a group of one have got to want to be motivated. They've got to have that within themselves. And I think what you can do is that you'll... You know, the things that we would have said at the start of the season are the things that we would have said, you know, at the start of every pre-season. You know, what our ambitions are. Yes, we want to go again. The ambition is to get promoted again. You know, they're the general things that you are going to say. The simple answer is you don't know. Mm-hmm. You don't know until you get into a series of games. And probably... We started the season reasonably well, and then we lost two games on the spin, away to Newcastle and at home to Brentford. And then we bounced back from that. And for me, probably that was the biggest indication, because we then went on a good run. And that was probably the biggest indication that, you know, I think we've got a chance here. But it's very, very difficult to see something in a pre-season. They were good pre-season, but they were good the season pre-season before that, and I expect them to be good again this pre-season. It's really, you know, what counts is once you get into the season and how the results go and how the mentality goes.
Chris, this has been such a brilliant period in your career, and you're now back in the Premier League as a manager. And, you know, the lads here would testify what a brilliant training ground coach you are and you've been. Certainly reading reports, it seemed like there was some kind of perception in the game that you were a coach and that you weren't manager material, whatever manager material is. I don't know, is it, you know, do you have to wear a fancy suit and be seen at grounds and have a certain personality? Mm. Were you aware of that perception? Did you feel that people in the game had you pegged as just a coach and not the right personality to manage a club?
Yes, I was aware of that, but I think it's also, you know, natural and normal, because, you know, I think they're only referring to what the facts are. I was a coach for a long period of time, for 14 and a half years. And until you go from being a coach until a manager, then, in effect, you know, nobody knows. Certainly for me, it was the right way to go. I think I've benefited from doing it that way. Mm. Do I think I was, you know, a manager or management material earlier in my coaching career? Then probably not.
Right.
And there are some that can walk straight, in effect, almost walk straight from playing into management. And there are those that can't. And I think probably I would fall into that latter category. Now, maybe if I, for whatever reason, had done it earlier, then possibly I might have made a good job of it.
Mm.
But certainly I don't think I was ready. I was certainly ready by the time I did. And it wasn't, for some, it's a great desire to want to manage. I didn't have a great desire to want to manage
earlier
in my coaching career. For me, it was more about making sure that I'm doing the best job that I can in the job that I'm doing.
Right. Am I right in saying you've been given the freedom of Brighton?
Yes, that is true.
Free entry into all the nightclubs in Brighton. You've got that already, obviously.
Right? Well, one of the things we thought it might be free parking, but for anybody that's been to Brighton, there isn't anybody that can get free parking. But it's something that was certainly a great honour for myself and the family. It was myself and our chairman and owner, Tony Bloom. But it was for me very much a reflection on what the team have done, And it was quite a humbling experience because I've only been in the area for just over 2 years, where, of course, our owner and chairman is born and bred and put a fortune into the club. So it was something certainly that I saw more as a reflection of what the team has done, but certainly a huge honour and very, very humbling.
Chris, seems to be a good relationship with it, clearly between the management staff, yourself in particular, and the players, but also the owner, Tony Bloom, you've mentioned there. From the outside looking in, it looks as if you've got a very healthy relationship with the owner. People talk about managing up as well as downwards, and it looks as if those key relationships within the football club are working well in your case.
Well, it's a very well-run football club, and it was, even when I first walked into the club, when we were in the bottom three, it didn't feel like a club that was in the bottom three. A wonderful stadium, a very impressive training facility, and it was just a question of trying to turn things around. But I've received great support from the moment that I've walked in, and some can say that you know, we've had two seasons where we've won more games than we've lost, and you know, generally there's a better feel when that happens. But the relationship has been very good, and probably most, as I say, most importantly, I've got great support from, you know, my CEO, the owner in particular, and the board. And I think that's all you can ask for, and that's all you can react to.
Chris, just one last thing. Can you assure us here on the radio next year we're going to see the calm, assured, collected Chris Hughton on the touchline next year? You're not going to morph into a Jurgen Klopp or Antonio Conte on the touchline. I've had enough of that over the past year. Can't suffer another one.
I certainly don't see me doing that. But of course, you know, as we've just spoke about, we've had two seasons where we've won a lot of games, and it's not being negative in saying that you know, we will lose more games next season than what we will win. It's normal for a team that goes up. But every manager has a particular style, and I try as much as I can to try and keep as composed as I can, which allows me more thinking time. But everybody's different. But
it's interesting you say that, Chris, because there's a perception out there. You hear a lot of kind of analysts and people around the game now. They say, oh, look at the way Klopp and Conte, how they involve themselves. It means so much
to them.
Yeah, the passion. Oh, that's what you want to see. Well, as a player, I know for me, that's not what I wanted to see from my manager. I didn't want to see my manager out of control on the touchline. I didn't want him consistently throwing information onto the football pitch. If you have your players prepared during the course of the week, you shouldn't have to. You should trust your players to go out and execute the game plan. So for me, a manager who's in control and who's calm on the touchline, that's the type of personality I want to see when I glance over at my dugout.
Yeah, well, Chris fits that bill. Chris, you've been very good with your time.
It's fantastic. Thank you. You know,
thanks very much, Chris.
Yeah. Well done, and well done again. It's going to be fantastic seeing you in the Premier League next season. We might check in with you once or twice.
No,
splash on the suits, splash out on the wardrobe next year, Chris.
We shall see. No, thanks, lad.
All right,
take care, Chris. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Chris,
bye-bye.
Chris Hughton, Freedom of Brighton, and back in the Premier League next season.
News Talks Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to AIR, with UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues action. Brought to you by AIR Sport.
You're welcome back. So Chris Hughton, excellent, Kev. Great talker. Hopefully he does well next year, yeah.
Brilliant. I mean, it was interesting to see how quickly as well his mind just transfers, isn't it? Premier League now. And
yeah.
He's got a big job. He's got a big job.
We'll get him on again. We didn't ask him about Richie Towell and a few other things, so we'll do that again. Now, you're not happy. You don't think the next 20 minutes of the show is going to go well.
Cribbing the pudding.
You're cribbing there in the ad break. We're going to finish with a quiz, right? No, your eyes! People love the Brian O'Driscoll Kenny quiz. We're now having a Kev versus Kenny quiz. An end
quit
of season.
Quit while you're ahead, Joe.
End
quit
of season
while
quiz.
You're ahead. You should know that. Your years in broadcast.
Can I show you the prize, though? You're going to love this. Kyo's Crisps were in touch. Oh, look at his face.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. Oh.
You can win a pack of Kenny Salted. A pack of Kenny Salted or specially commissioned some cheese and Cunningham. Unbelievable.
I'm Kenny. Feeling a bit uneasy about
oh,
this.
Dear.
There
we
I'm
go.
Feeling a bit uneasy
now,
about
you,
this. I've got
have
to
you
admit
not
it.
Made it now? You've got your own crisp brands there.
No, I don't want people thinking for a moment the reason I threw Joe's names into the conversation to get some
Kenny,
Chris.
They need framing. Take the eat the Chris.
You can't eat
all.
Them. You can't eat them if you win. But the thing is, you have to beat Kevin the quiz to get them.
Oh.
That is the point.
That's a nice touch, that.
Yeah. Well, it's they nice sent touch. Them. We didn't ask them to. They heard you talking about them, and so they sent them in. So we
well,
said,
I don't only talk about cows.
I know that.
To be fair, I like to spread the gospel.
Other crisps are available.
Other crisp eateries. We just mentioned the fish and chips. Yeah. Kev's recommendation around the corner. It's all good. Spread the word.
Yeah.
That's what's going out with the. That's what the quiz is for there. But I have to finish quickly. Lads, I was at Bethpage Black for the O2 US Open. I had an all-access pass and I met Sergio Garcia in the Jacks in the clubhouse. It was the morning of the Spain match. I congratulated him. I asked him, did he watch the match? He said that he had. I said, well done. His reply was, what the hell happened? But Roy Keane, Paul in Limerick. It went everywhere.
I thought you were going to say, why didn't Kenny Cunningham take one of those?
He may well have asked that too. How could you forget Ruben Baraja, Joe? One of the finest crossfield passers of the ball in the early 2000s with Spain and Valencia, Tim and Limerick.
Yeah. Baraja, now that you mentioned.
Yeah, I remember that when you said the name. Yeah, I knew the name.
Valeron,
you said that, yeah.
Valeron, the Deportivo lad, left foot midfielder.
Yeah.
Sweet player.
I swapped shirts with Carlos Puyol after that game, actually. Well, he swapped shirts with me, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, you chased him off the pitch.
Yeah.
Carlos!
Yeah.
We'll finish this because we started it, but that's the only reason. Okay, you had your penalty. Everyone's proud of you that you stepped up and took it, Kev. Don't beat yourself up.
Hold on, but moving on to Carlos Puyol. Do you remember being in the coach underneath the tunnel that they say waiting to leave, and the Spanish players were stood outside their coach and they'd bottled beer, they had the fags, smoking a few fags, yeah. Puyol and a couple of the players. Yeah, directly.
Yeah.
Didn't pass any beers in, did I?
No.
Well, what would you have said to them? Anyway, you missed yours. That can happen. Valeron stepped up. He rolled his wide, giving a dive the other way. So it was still Ireland 1, Spain 2. Steve Finnan steps up, smashes it in, makes it 2-2.
It was caressed into the court. It was a beautiful penalty from Finney. I think he sent Casillas the wrong way.
Oh, he did. He rolled it into the left.
Brilliant goal. Yeah. Brilliant penalty.
He's a Terminator. Finney just no nerves. He was like a machine.
Ice.
Still not human. I'm still not convinced.
Ice cool. So he made a 2-2, one penalty left. Mendieta steps up, repositions the ball on the spot. Finally, he takes it and rolls it straight down the middle with virtually no pace. It's an awful, awful penalty, but it bobbles over Gibbons' training leg. Spain go through 3-2 on penalties.
Probably the fact he didn't put that much pace on it.
Bobbled.
Probably in terms of the, amazing. Yeah.
We have to get a short ad break out of the way and then Kenny Cunningham's going to play for his crisps.
News Talks Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to Air, with UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues action. Brought to you by Air Sports.
Welcome back. So we're finishing with a quiz because Kenny insisted that we do one. He's going to play for his pack of Cheese and Cunningham and Kenny Salted Cows crisps. It's the end of the 2016-17 season. So rather than getting you to do your Kenny Awards, which I know you don't like doing either, we're going to finish with a quiz.
Be original, yeah.
We should have had that.
Are you ready
to go? Have we got a buzzer? No.
No, but it's your question. You don't need to buzz. I'm giving you the question. Okay, let's get things started.
You know how bad my memory is, Kev.
Okay.
He's a heavy favourite. Kevin Caban's a heavy favourite for this.
This is the 2016-17 season
he's
quiz.
He's ultra professional.
We've 10 minutes to race through this. We're starting. You're up first. So three rounds and then a quick fire. So you can make up the gap if you don't start off well here. We know your love of football kits, but can you name any of this season's Premier League kits that were made by Puma? Just need one team made by Puma.
One team? Come on. Joe.
You know, you got a couple, haven't you?
I've definitely got one.
Is it a top six team?
Must be one of the top six.
Kev, you're not the adjudicator. One of the top six teams.
I'm not giving you clues.
I'll go with Arsenal.
Oh, yeah.
Correct. Yeah. You could have went with Arsenal, Burnley, or Leicester. Kevin Caban, what is the easternmost side to have appeared in this season's Premier League?
Ooh. Hull City.
West Ham.
Oh.
Yeah. Early lead for Kenny Cunningham, 1-0 up. Second round, Kenny. Wayne Rooney became Manchester United's all-time top scorer.
He beat Bobby Charlton.
Season just gone. He also became the all-time top active Premier League goal scorer. Active players. He's
active,
top.
So yeah. He's got a heartbeat. What are you talking about?
He's still playing. Who's behind Rooney in the active Premier League table, all-time Premier League goal scorers? active players.
Who played this season? Still playing.
Played this season.
Why not? One springs to mind, but I'm going to have to park him for a minute.
Right.
I'm going to go Jermaine Defoe.
Yeah.
2-0.
Hold it.
He's out of the seat.
We know Kev cracks when the pressure's on. We just.
Yeah, right.
Penalty kick, side pan. We've already improved that.
Oh, no, come on.
Harsh, harsh.
If I'd said that now, you wouldn't have been happy. To go back to 2-1. An interesting transfer window preceded this season. Paul Pogba, obviously the most expensive player signed in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Who was the second most expensive signing made by a Premier League club last summer?
Trying to make it up to him now.
Last summer, John Stones.
Nice, 2-1. Okay.
I knew that, dragging it out. Pure theatre there from Kev.
Final question before the quickfire end. To go 3-1 up, Kenny, can you tell me who finished the 2016 season second in the Premier League and went into the calendar year, so the start of 2017, as Chelsea's nearest challengers?
There's a lot of information there.
They were second.
December 16, which is 6 months ago,
yeah.
Who was second to Chelsea?
As the clock struck 12 on New Year's Eve, who was second to Chelsea?
Yeah. Right. I'm going to go with... it's a guess. Liverpool.
He knew it.
Name on the trophy.
Yeah.
3-1.
Oh.
Going to win the league.
I've got to have him.
Quiz is done.
Forget about the quick four. Just give me the quiz.
Kev, to go 3-2 and keep the pressure on this man. Against which side did Chelsea enjoy their biggest win of the 2016-17 Premier League season? Who do they beat by the most across the season?
Home and away?
Just a one-off game. One-off game.
Just trying to muddy the waters there. Oh, yeah. I remember that. The time limit on
the clock is ticking.
Yeah.
Is it ticking?
It's ticking for me, I know that.
Right. I don't know if they did someone 6. They did Everton. I know they did Everton 5, but...
Say it.
Did they do someone 6 or 7?
He's looking for a reaction. Say now, he's looking for a reaction from Joan, he said that. That's poor, Kev.
They've done someone 6, but I can't think. Everton.
Correct.
Is it?
Everton 5-0.
Ah, right, yeah.
Didn't think it was.
Fantastic. We're going to skip to the quickfire round, I think, at this stage.
Let's bin it.
No, here we go. This is for the...
He can have a pack. I'll give him a handful of the Chris.
You're taking these home to frame them.
Yeah, they need framing.
All right, Kenny. So you're 3-2 up, and I've got 9 questions here. Oh, no, sorry. You get a certain amount of time, is it? 20 seconds. You get 20 seconds here, Kenny.
Right.
To answer as many as you can, you're 3-2 up for
next,
the crisps.
What about next? Just
you can say pass, yeah.
Pass.
Yeah, for your cheese and Cunningham and Kenny Salda crisps, which I know mean a lot to you. Your time starts with a Jerry Gilroy big throbbing hole.
Big throbbing hole.
Who had more assists during the season, De Bruyne or Eriksen?
De Bruyne.
Correct. At what stadium did Chelsea clinch the title? Twenty seconds here for your whole thing.
Goodison Park.
No. Who won the League Cup?
Man United.
Time up. He got 2.
Oh.
You're at 5. Jeez. I thought this was going to be a home run for you, but suddenly I'm worried. It's 5-2. 5-2.
How long's this show? 4 hours. You're only giving 20 seconds. I wouldn't let that one go. It was killing me. Where Chelsea won this,
I just
couldn't let it go. I couldn't.
Did I hear you say the Hawthorns?
Hawthorns, yeah.
He was delighted. Yeah.
So suddenly, Kev, you're right in this.
Oh,
got a window.
If you need a window of opportunity. If you get 3, your level scores.
Where's my stopwatch? Right. I'll do the time. Yeah.
There's no need. Right.
I've got it. 20.
Right. Here we go. This is tense now. This is a big one. Your time starts with a Jerry Gilroy, Real Madrid.
Real Madrid.
Who had more interceptions during the season, Kante or Herrera?
Herrera.
Other than Walters, which other Irish player scored 4 league goals this season?
Seamus Coleman.
Who came second in the Premier League Golden Boot race?
Romelu Lukaku.
Which goalkeeper kept the most clean sheets this season in the league?
Courtois.
Name the goalkeeper on the PFA Team of the Year.
De Gea.
Who succeeded... I've started, so I have to finish. Who succeeded Alan Pardew at Palace?
22 seconds, boy.
Big Sam.
How many is that?
22 seconds, I counted there.
The final score is Kevin Kilbane 7, Kenny Cunningham 5.
You're well over. Well over the time there.
You choked.
After Kev's tactics. He wasn't even thinking. He was just throwing answers out there.
That was fantastic. Kevin Kilbane. More interceptions during the season. Kante had more than Herrera. It wasn't Herrera, it was Kante.
Was it, yeah.
Yeah. How could you go for it? Yeah, got out for Kante.
Yeah.
Coleman, you were correct, was the Irish player. Lukaku was second in the Golden Boot.
Sweet.
Courtois.
Lukaku was great.
Yeah. Courtois, most clean sheets. And De Gea was on the PFA Team of the Year. So, Kevin Kilbane, you've won yourself a packet of
no, I
kills.
Couldn't take them.
Jesus, Cunningham.
I could
and
not
a packet
take them.
Of Kenny Sobers.
No, no, they've been sent in specifically for Kendo. There's
skill
no
by
chance.
Error that. Skill by error
no
that.
Chance. No
oh,
chance.
Oh, dear. Kenny, there you go. Enjoy your crisps.
Cheers, Joe. Nice touch. Nice touch that.
You've made it now.
This is when we need a camera in the studio, really,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, well, no, we'll get some nice photos of you. Delighted.
Dream up.
Plenty for social media. We'll get a bit on social media, yeah.
Love social media. Think of all the hits and likes and retweets
you'll
get.
Oh, can you imagine that, Ken?
You'll be trending.
Where did I get the potatoes?
Oh, yeah, Kenny's asked a question before. Where did I farm the potatoes? Grow the potatoes?
I don't know. Are you asking?
It has to be on the west. It has
I'm going to tell you. 20 seconds.
Has
time
be,
start.
Has no. to be over in the west. Has to be over in the west.
No.
Mayo, Galway.
Now, can you,
Abbottstown.
It's not as.
Walked into Everest. The FAI headquarters in Abbottstown, looking around the new performance gym area they have out there. Walked into the main reception on my right hand side, about 15 boxes of Kyo's crisps. Couldn't believe it. Had to go to reception and inquire, what's going on here? The cow's crisps. She said, well, they farmed them in the fields at the back of Abbottstown over there.
Yeah.
Bit of trivia.
Did that take the magic away from you?
So okay tempted to bundle one of those boxes into the. And I was leaving. I could have done it. It was a proper moral conundrum I had walking out the door. What, CCTV? Really? Should I gamble? Should I not? No, I'll leave it.
Earlier on, we gave you a chance to win a pair of VIP tickets to our Off the Ball FA Cup 2017 roadshow at the Helix this Thursday, with thanks to Budweiser, official beer of the Emirates FA Cup. Congratulations to Jimmy Costello, who's won those tickets. Good man, Jimmy. And if you missed out tonight, we'll give you another chance to win another pair of VIP tickets on tomorrow night's show. And remember, you can register for regular tickets for the roadshow at newstalk.com/OTB Helix. We have a minute and a half. We have to go when the clock hits 58. You're heading to Stockholm tomorrow with Dave.
Stockholm with Dave tomorrow. Yeah,
and you're working on the Europa
I'm
League for
to the keys.
For Air Sport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's going to win this game?
United.
Have you seen much of Ajax? Fancy United?
Oh, hands down.
Ajax, right. A good young side, but I think United will have too much. I think ideally we'd want 5 Premier League sides in the Champions League next season, wouldn't we?
I think you can easily make an argument. If you analyse the performance of Ajax, like semi-finals and before that, you can make a strong argument for Ajax winning this game in terms of the attacking threat, which they have. But for me, it's just more of a gut feeling with United for quite some time now. Obviously, I fancied to win at the start, but as the tournament went on, the level of performance has almost dropped as the competition has gone on.
And the results still came, though.
Yeah, it's almost that like collective, a little bit of will, almost willpower, which is pushing them on. And I think that would probably be the deciding factor in the final. I don't expect them to play particularly well.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be more of the same. But again, I think they'll just do enough.
Okay. Enjoy the final in Stockholm.
Good man.
I know you're there with Dave, so we'll see you later in the week.
Best of luck with that, Kev.
And Kenny Cunningham, a pleasure once again. What a joy to have you in.
Kenny Salted.
Ah, well.
Delighted. He's delighted.
Delighted.
No, thank you very much for coming in.
Cheers, lads.
Thanks, Ken.
Nice one.
All right, Tom Dunn is on the way. We'll talk to you tomorrow, 7 o'clock. Look.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.